For the New York State AFL-CIO, I'm Darcy Wells, and this is Union Strong. The 2019 New York State legislative session is a wrap. In this episode, we sit down with the president of the New York State AFL-CIO, Mario Cilento, to talk about labor's victories and the looming fights ahead. This week also happens to be the one-year anniversary of the U.S. Supreme Court decision on Janus versus AFSCME. We'll reflect on what that ruling has meant to public employee unions and what labor accomplished here in New York State to protect those workers. Joining me on the podcast is the president of the New York State AFL-CIO, Mario Cilento. Mario, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Darcy.
So we're just days at the end of the after the end of the session, and hopefully folks have had some time to catch up on their sleep, and we can take a look now at what labor was able to get done. Right out of the gate, the big win for labor was passage of the Farm Workers Fair Labor Practices Act, giving farm workers basic labor rights. What a long fight it's been, and what a tremendous victory. I know you were in the assembly chamber the day it was passed in that house when one of the bill's sponsors, Assemblywoman Kathy Nolan, was casting her vote before the final tally.
I want to acknowledge the speaker again. I want to acknowledge Andrea Stewart Cousin, Leader Cousins. Let's face it, colleagues, we have a different Senate today. That's why 20 years of work has finally seen journey home. My wonderful colleague and sponsor in the Senate, Senator
Ms.
Ramos, is here.
Nolan.
I am happy to vote in the affirmative.
Ms. Nolan, in the affirmative. Are there any other votes? Announce the results.
Ayes 84, noes 51.
The bill has passed.
That must have been awesome when people were celebrating that moment. You were there.
It was incredible. You know, it was 20 years in the making. It was a lot of really blood, sweat, and tears from a lot of people, not just here at the state AFL-CIO, but the Rural and Migrant Ministry and Richard Witt, who leads that organization, and the various advocacy groups. Everyone for more than two decades joining together year after year after year, fighting for what we knew to be right and just and true. That's what this was about. This was about fairness and equality, and it was finally achieved. And to see the looks on people's faces and a lot of the tears that were shed that day,
sure.
Not only at that moment in the assembly, but let's keep in mind later that afternoon it passed the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say thank you so much to Kathy Nolan, who for 20 years led this fight in the assembly and never, never relented. And then certainly in the Senate, Senator Ramos, who really reinvigorated the fight coming in this year, making it a priority for her as the chair of the Labor Committee, and really revitalizing this initiative in a way where it got the attention of everyone across the state. And they went out and she did the town hall meetings across the state, and she heard from everyone within the industry. So both... both Kathy Nolan and Jessica Ramos deserve a great deal of credit, along with Speaker Hastie and Majority Leader Andrea Stewart Cousins. And we look forward now to the governor signing this bill, which we know he will, because he's been a longtime champion as well of farm workers. But that day was really, again, it was two decades or so in the making. And for these workers now to be treated with the same rights and protections of everyone else in this state is really what this is all about. The right to a day of rest, the right to overtime pay, and of course, the right to join a union. I mean, that to me now, for everyone involved, that workers now having the opportunity to join a union, and if they so choose, which I certainly believe most, if not all of them will, allowing them to have a say on what happens to their daily work lives, I think speaks for itself. And I think that for everyone was really the biggest sigh of relief that finally, you know, we had a really base standard here. It was such a low standard, treated like everyone else. But once you get that, the feeling of euphoria, I think, amongst everyone in that hall, in that chamber when it passed, you could just see that how much it meant to so many of the farm workers who were there that day.
Yeah, it was emotional for them.
It was very emotional.
Yeah.
And And again, I said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it one more time. The fact that we even got to this point in the year 2019 where they didn't have the same rights and protections of everyone else was disgraceful. Mm-hmm. So taking it from there to what we have now is a victory, I think, not only for us here in New York State, but across this country, to show that, you know, you never give up. If you fight for what is right and just and true, you will win. You know, this fight started here in 99. When my predecessor, Dennis Hughes, was president. And Dennis deserves an awful lot of credit because it was something that the state Fed had never been a part of. So I want to say a thank you to Dennis Hughes. We all owe Dennis a debt of gratitude because sometimes all these years later, you forget those who maybe came before us and who started the fight. It's not just who finished it, but
right.
It's who started it. So Dennis deserves a lot of credit.
So another big win had to do with labor protections for striking workers. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, it was again. This is a pretty big deal here because what we were able to do, if you know, we all have seen strikes take place from time to time, and no one, it should be clear, no one likes to go on strike. Nobody wants to go on strike. Workers are forced to go on strike. They have to make a decision to forego a paycheck, and to put their families in a position where you're not really sure how you're going to live because the phrase paycheck to paycheck doesn't apply anymore. You're not getting a paycheck when you go on strike.
You were there for one that happened in the Capital Region.
Right, the momentum strike.
The momentum strike in Saratoga County, which lasted 15 weeks.
I'm 36 years old. I've been working here for a year and 4 months. I started August of last year in Building 30. Just had a baby 2 weeks ago, so excited about that, but the timing is not that great.
I'm a single mother with 2 kids. My oldest daughter, she's chronic asthmatic.
I think everybody went in knowing that we might have to give up a little bit, and I think a lot of people were probably willing to give up a little bit, but they just took too much. It's too much to ask of us when they've already taken so much over the past 12 years.
Think about what they said, you know? How difficult it was to make that decision.
Yeah.
These are decisions that are not made lightly. And they referenced their families and how they were going to try to take care of them.
How can anyone endure that? That's crazy.
Exactly. So this bill will allow workers to collect unemployment insurance benefits after 1 week of on strike. And 1 week is the normal time period for anyone who's out of work. After you're out 1 week, you can claim and put in for unemployment insurance benefits. This bill will allow striking workers now to receive their unemployment benefit after 1 week. So what this does, it helps you get through, maybe help to pay a few bills until you can get back to work and the strike is over. But it's a tremendous, tremendous victory.
Right. Some of the other victories, it's called the SWEAT bill. What's that about?
That protects against wage theft, and it sort of levels the playing field. It holds the company owners personally liable for unpaid wages. So again, that was a major victory for workers. These are the sort of issues that are below the radar.
Right. People aren't talking about
people know
them,
about farm workers, and
sure,
that's great, and they should, and we're proud of it. But issues like this, the SWEAT bill, so to speak, go under the radar. Same thing with the call center bill that requires communications companies to provide notice to the Department of Labor for reductions in state call centers. Again, a great victory. I know our brothers and sisters at CWA led that fight. Another issue that sort of goes under the radar, issues like the school workplace violence protection, which we worked with NYSET on, but our brothers and sisters at NYSET did a great job. It keeps schools and our teachers and everyone in our schools, our teachers' aides, our paraprofessionals, safe, and it brings them up to the same standards of all other public sector workers. How vitally important that was. They got that done as well. There was one of the issues in that package of bills allows for cameras now to go on school buses, and how important that is. I was reading a statistic, or somebody gave me a statistic the other day, that on average there are 50,000 instances where someone blows by one of those stop signs that come out on a school bus.
Which is an incredible number and hard to believe, but they are documented incidents.
Stopping video from a security camera shows a driver coming within inches of mowing down 3 school children. Enraged parents say they watched that driver speed past the bus just as their children were about to get on.
A dramatic video from a Norwich school bus shows the driver saving the life of a student who was almost plowed down by a passing car. Driver Samantha Call is being praised for her quick reaction in grabbing the shirt of a student as he was about to exit the bus.
This year, it's definitely multiplied. I'm getting passed at least daily.
A, it makes me really angry that anyone would do that. And B, and more importantly to me, as a parent who has three children who go on three separate buses every day to and from school, it scares the heck out of me. I mean, it literally scares me that that's the case. So the fact that there'll be cameras on those buses is a great thing. And again, New York State United Teachers did an incredible job getting that done.
So we also had the elevator safety bill. I know that was first introduced in 2011. Yeah. That finally passed. We have some news clips from a 2014 campaign of the Elevators Constructors Union Local 1 campaign, and it speaks to the critical need for this legislation.
12-year-old boy in the hospital tonight after a horrible fall down an elevator shaft.
Why an elevator at the Happy Ice Factory there unexpectedly dropped today.
Suzanne Hart, a 41-year-old executive at the advertising firm Young & Rubicam, was entering one of the lobby's 13 elevators when the door suddenly closed on her trailing leg.
So you hear those kind of things happening to people on elevators, and this shows you how critical legislation like this is.
First of all, I think Lenny Ligotti, the head of that union, did a great job. And again, it's about fighting for what you know is right for as long as it takes, and eventually good things will happen. But think about this, and this is, I know, has been part of the argument. You need a license in this state to be a barber, to cut hair, to do nails and all those things, and worthwhile endeavors and very important jobs in and of themselves. But until now, you didn't need a license to inspect and maintain the elevators.
Right.
And it's incredible. So that was a great victory, and it keeps us all safe. See, that's the other thing. These are issues of the general public. Why would they know about it? Mm-hmm. How could they know about it? Everything that they do in their lives, they're concerned about, again, going to work, providing for themselves and their families, keeping a roof over their heads. But when we fight as a labor movement and our affiliate unions fight for these issues, it not only enhances the lives of their members, but really protects us as a society.
And they've got some other victories having to do with, we touched on a couple already, but wages for workers with a fairness for car wash workers. What will that one do?
That was, I have to say, Stuart Applebaum did an incredible job. Again, one of these issues where you shouldn't have to fight as long, but the RWD issue and Stuart, it really restores some semblance of fairness for these workers. It requires the full minimum wage in New York City, the Nassau and Suffolk County and Westchester. And it makes it easier for employers to maintain records for their payroll. It really is a great victory for these workers who a lot of times in this industry are exploited.
And a couple other ones, and then let's take a look at the budget, too. A couple others that maybe people wouldn't be aware of.
Oh, yeah. I know. You know, we were talking about this before, this issue on gravity knives. And a gravity knife is something where if you could basically flick your wrist and the knife comes out to a certain level. These had always been illegal to hold, meaning, and this is the crazy part, for many years, you could buy this knife in the hardware store, pay for it, that's legal. Go into the street, leave the store, go into the street, and then the knife is illegal. So what would happen was on many occasions we'd have workers who worked a lot of New York, well, all across the state. We had heard many instances for stagehands in New York City, for instances. They'd leave at night. They'd leave the show where they're working on whatever, the stages and the stage crews. And they'd have the knives hanging out of their pocket because they're just like they're leaving. You know, after a show, it's over. It's 11 o'clock at night to go home.
It's a tool of their trade.
It's a tool of their trade. And they are stopped and either arrested or given a summons. You know, a lot of workers, they work on assembly lines or in various manufacturing plants where, again, you need this sort of tool, as you say, a tool of the trade. And they're stopped with the possibility of even being arrested. So we were able to get this law removes the term gravity knife from these sections of the penal law, which criminalize the basic utility knives. And the governor's already signed it.
Okay,
so
good.
It's passed and signed into law. And that really worked out well.
And just a final one here, the Writers and Directors Diversity Tax Credit. What will that do?
Yeah, it creates a tax credit for the fees and services, I believe, of minority and woman film and television directors and writers in New York. And again, another issue that's been worked on a while. And I think that's what people have to understand. For the most part, for comprehensive legislation, for real progressive legislation, so to speak, it's difficult to get them done quickly. Now, this session, we did see a whole lot of issues get done quickly. It was the right atmosphere for it coming after the elections of last year. But for the most part, issues like this, that are, as I said before, below the radar, it takes time to get done. And each of these other issues that you've brought up, we've just basically touched upon, mm-hmm. are things that you really have to work hard at in terms of educating elected officials. Again, the larger issues, some of the things that were passed outside of labor, you know, a lot of the social progressive issues, they're out there. People hear about them before the session starts. People already have an idea of where they're going to be on this if you're an elected official. But some of these other issues, as you know, as we mentioned, whether it was the sweat bill or elevator safety or workplace violence or the strike bill, the circle of people who really understand it is much smaller. So you have to work that much harder at educating elected officials. And I think that's what the labor movement should really be most proud of, that we're coming together in a way now where we just, let's face it, we just might have mentioned, Darcy, a dozen issues, maybe. Mm-hmm. There were dozens more that passed as well that we're not going to have time to get into today that were passed by our individual affiliates that's directly affected their members. And I think we're recognizing as a labor movement, I think we're doing a much better job these last few years of coordinating what we're doing on the larger issues, but also sharing information so that we can help each other on the smaller issues as well, and helping one union get something passed. And I think the best example of that is, you know, we wanted to talk about what happened also earlier this session in the budget with the Janus case. You know,
right. We're coming up on the one-year anniversary of that. Right.
Right. And we got the first round passed last year, which helped to mitigate the damage and streamlined how public sector workers can join a union. Mm-hmm. This year, we were able to get a second round that really protects the private information of public employees. In other words, protects their home phone numbers, their cell phone numbers, their home addresses, their email addresses. You know, up until now, that information could be given out. It wasn't given out an awful lot, but it could be given out. And, you know, this legislation did was codify an executive order that the governor had put forth last year, and now it's the law of the land. But we know that right after the Janus case, the verdict was delivered last June, within 12 hours of that case, for anybody who didn't think that this was coordinated by the right-wing ideologues who want to silence the voice of organized labor, within 12 hours of that verdict, public sector workers, not only in this state but across this country, were getting emails telling them, you don't have to pay your dues. Why pay your dues? Leave
right.
your union.
Here's how
within
you do that.
12
right.
hours of the verdict.
And we should remind people what that verdict meant. What did that decision result in?
It said basically that you did not have to join your dues, even if there was a collective bargaining agreement in your workplace. That
and we're talking about public employees.
Public sector workers, that you, in fact, could choose not to be part of that union, but still, by the way,
benefit.
Be on the receiving end of all of the benefits that come along with it, the collective bargaining agreement and the raises and the health care and the pension and all that other stuff. So that happened right away within the first 12 hours. A few weeks later, people were calling public sector workers. A few weeks after that, they started knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be that much more difficult now to get that information, one. But I think the biggest thing to take out of that is here we are a year later. And not only have we not lost membership, but particularly in this state, we have had several public sector unions who have gained membership in this state because, A, they educated their members on the importance of continuing to pay dues and being participating in their union. But more importantly, I think workers saw this as an attack on their rights. They saw it as an attack on their freedom to be part of a union. I think our public sector unions deserve an unbelievable amount of credit for speaking with their members and educating them. And really, most importantly, it's about results, right? I mean, members wouldn't continue to pay dues if they didn't see results. So they've seen results from their unions. But to get back to my original point is, you know, when the labor movement speaks out on this, when the state AFL-CIO speaks out on this, as we did at the beginning of the session, we got this legislation passed within the budget. It's private sector unions and it's building and construction trades unions who give their voice through the AFL-CIO to help their brothers and sisters in the public sector.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
That's what we should all be proud of. And I we certainly are here at the state AFL-CIO.
So there were a couple other things that were included in the budget. We just want to remind people, Workforce Development Institute, the grant money there was secured.
Yeah, we were able to get, again, secure grant funding for Workforce Development Institute, the Cornell ILR, domestic violence programs, sexual harassment programs, criminal justice and employment programs, union leadership programs, the programs that we work with, where we work with other organizations to continue to fund that helps us in the workplace and outside of the workplace. So we were able to do that. And in the beginning of the session, before we even were done with the budget, the first few weeks of the session, a priority of the state AFL-CIO for many years was vote by mail. And that was passed by this legislature. It now has to be passed again by a separately elected legislature, which would be 2021. And then at that point, it'll go to the electorate for a vote for a referendum to our Constitution, probably most likely into the fall of 2021, to allow the citizens of the state to vote by mail.
Okay, very good. So what's next? We've covered a lot. And by the way, we're going to make sure that we have this wrap-up of the session up on our website. But what about the remainder of the year? What is the state Fed going to be focused on?
Well, this what we do now is now that this is over, we go back. We have issues on our legislative agenda that weren't addressed this year because you can't get everything addressed. So we'll go back. We will firm up those initiatives. And then what we do now through the summer and early fall is convene with our affiliates, again, speak with our executive board about what we want to put at the top of the priority list legislatively. We have board meeting. We have a board meeting in December every year where we vote on it to make sure that everybody understands where we are on these things. And again, it's fluid. After we get through December and we get into January, we can always add issues to the legislative agenda. But we take the next few months to get everyone together, take a look and see what we want the priorities to be, how far along we are. If something's been on our priority list, do we have to modify it? Is there something that we can do to tweak our strategy? So we take these next few months to do that so that we're ready to go hit the ground running on January 1st going into the next year.
We appreciate you coming on the program again. It's always a pleasure. Thank you for all the insight, and we'll have you on again soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Darcy.
Joining me now on the podcast is our digital director, Kevin Eidsman. Hi, Kevin. How you doing?
Hi, Darcy. Good.
It was nice to hear Mario reflect, and people couldn't see his face, but he was really just beaming when he was talking about the farm workers bill. It was great.
It was a busy session. I mean, we were looking back in the records, and we had pictures of Cesar Chavez, you know, visiting the state Fed, you know, decades ago and talking about the farm workers bill and him talking about Dennis Hughes starting the fight and really, you know, over time, what it took to get it done. And, you know, he mentioned it as well. It's the members too, right? The members participating, the phone calls that you guys made. You know, we had a podcast on this issue earlier with Jose Chapa. And, you know, people took action and they called their senators. They asked for them to support the farm workers bill. And everybody, you know, listening and everybody that, that participates with the state Fed really had a part of, you know, of this win. You know, so when we go into these next fights, that's really a big part of it is, you know, pay attention to what we're doing on social media, what we're doing on the podcast, and we'll
get involved, participate.
Yeah, get involved. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. We have a text program that connects you directly to your legislators when we have a current action taking place. And it really, really does make a difference and, you know, help secure this win, among others.
Also, hearing Mario talk about the Janus, here we are 1 year later. As you know, he sent us around the state to really listen to members. And you know, nobody was quite sure what was going to happen, but we were feeling pretty good because we were getting some positive feedback. But to see where we are a year later with these public employee unions doing so well and better than expected and better they had been doing before the decision came down is just really incredible.
I mean, the public sector unions, you know, were always active, but they really have turned into an organizing model of being really involved with the membership, talking to them on a daily basis, getting them involved, getting them politically active, socially active, active in their union. And it's made a difference. They're there. They're not questioning whether they should join the union. They're staying union strong. You know, stay union, stay strong. Everybody has their own, you know, version of the program that they're doing. But it has been absolutely amazing and very impressive.
We'll have the wrap-up of the legislative session up on our website, right? So folks can go in and see some of the other victories. Mario went through a few of them.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much, Kevin. And everyone, we will see you next time. In the meantime, stay union and stay strong.